House, please come to order. Will the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
Thirty-four present, six absent.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, no one's excused from the call of the House today. I'll ask unanimous consent that absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Our chaplain today is Pastor Robert McNabb, the Community Douglas United Methodist Church. Will the House please rise for prayer? Representative Parr.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread in the journal.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Are there guests for introduction to the chambers? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, I'm allowing to become law without my signature, and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. House Bill number 286. Amending the Fiscal Year 76 of General Appropriations Act, Chapter 49, SLA 1977. This letter has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. Mr. Speaker, I have signed the following bill and am transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Free Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 312, Regulation of Educational Institutions, Chapter 50, SLA 1977. House Concurrent Resolution Number 72, Commending Anchorage International Airport Fire Security Section. Senate Committee.
Excuse me, Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. From the governor, would the clerk please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 135th day.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body approve the journal as certified by the chief clerk for the 135th day.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Further messages from the governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, I've read the following resolutions and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. House Concurrent Resolution Number 72, Commending Anchorage International Airport Fire Security Section. Senate Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 73, Honoring the Memory of Emory F. Tobin. House Concurrent Resolution Number 78, Honoring Ruth Anderson, Beatrice Shepherd, and Herman Trivett. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 32, Annulling Student Loan Indebtedness Regulation. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 64, Recalling the Life of Cedric Davis. Senate Bill Number 57, Bond Requirement for Real Estate Surety Fund, Chapter 51, SLA 1977. House Bill Number 95, Bonds of the Alaska State Housing Authority, Chapter 52, SLA 1977. House Bill Number 308, amended, relating to Electrical Administrators, Chapter 53, SLA 1977. I am allowing to become law without my signature and am transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Free Conference Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 180, relating to licenses for sale of alcoholic beverages, Chapter 54, SLA 1977. This letter has been reproduced and placed on each member's desk, too. And also this one, allowing to become law without signature. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 90, relating to domestic animals, Chapter 55, SLA 1977. Senate Bill Number 197, amended House, sale of subsistence salmon roe, Chapter 56, SLA 1977. House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 188, membership on the Alaska Code Commission and Criminal Law Revision Subcommission, Chapter 57, SLA 1977. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has passed the following and they are returned. House Concurrent Resolution Number 65, amended, requesting the Governor to preserve the Superintendent's quarters at the Alaska Pioneers Home in Sitka. Committee substitute for House Bill Number 193 amended, child care with an effective date. These bills have been sent to enrolling. Mr. Speaker, the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to Senate Bill Number 50 amended, utilities and state rights of way with an effective date, thus adopting House Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 50 finance amended House, utilities with an effective date. The Senate has adopted the free conference committee report on committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 238 amended and House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 238, oil and gas properties production tax with an effective date, thus adopting free conference CS for House CS for Senate Bill Number 238, oil and gas taxation with an effective date. The Senate has failed to concur in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 150, supplemental appropriation to the Department of Education with an effective date, namely House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 150, appropriations to the Department of Education with an effective date, and respectfully request the House to recede from its amendment. In the event that the House does not recede, the President has appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the House to consider the above bills. Senator Hackney, Chairman, Senator Ferguson, Senator Orsini. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill Number 185, regulating theatrical production and sports exhibition promoters with the following amendments. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill Number 185 amended Senate relating to concert promoters and returning same for consideration. The Senate has passed House Bill Number 404 amended, revenue collected by the state for other entities effective date with the following amendment. It has been duplicated and placed on your desks. And so House Bill Number 404 amended Senate with the same title is transmitted herewith for consideration. The Senate has passed the following and they are transmitted herewith. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 66 by Hackney, Buttrevich, and Huber, honoring Bob Westcott.
Refer to the Rules Committee.
Senate Bill Number 327 amended by Croft, an act relating to the satisfaction of judgments and liens.
Commerce.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
I have no communications.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on State Affairs has had Senate Bill 130, bidding on highway projects valued at less than $20,000, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill 130 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurring by Bradley, Miles, McKinnon, and Kelly. Senate Bill 130 has no further referral. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had House Bill 547 relating to speed limits under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 547 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Rudd, Chairman, concurring by Kelly, Smith, Phillips, Rudd, Anderson, and Miles. Having no recommendation, Loveseth and Snyder. House Bill 547 has a further referral to Judiciary. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, may we please?
House, please stand at ease. Back to order. Mr. Clerk, further reports to special committees.
Mr. Speaker, the Free Conference Committee, which has had committee substitute for House Bill 195 and committee substitute for House Bill 195 amended Senate under consideration, recommends that Free Conference Committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 195, regulation of the drilling of deep wells other than oil or gas wells, be adopted. The report was signed by the Senate members Huber, Chairman, Rohde, and Tillion, by the House members Cotton, Chairman, Chatterton, and Smith. This has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions.
Please, please.
House, please stand at ease. Clerk, have resolutions for introduction.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 79 by Parr, Byrne, Bennett, Carpenter, Chatterton, Cotton, Dankworth, Guy, Hayes, Kelly, Lathine, Meekins, Miles, Osi, Phillips, Rudd, Smith, and Snyder, relating to a cost analysis of keeping the Capitol in Juneau.
The bill referral sheets that are distributed on this bill show a resolution, show a state affairs referral. I've had a request for a finance referral. I'm going to add that referral, make the referrals on HCR 79, state affairs and finance. Representative Bradley.
Can we have an at-ease then?
House, please stand at ease. Clerk, further resolutions for introduction.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills.
House Bill Number 549, with a transmittal letter by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act revising the laws relating to drug abuse in accordance with the Uniform Controlled Substances Act.
Refer to the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill Number 550, with a transmittal letter by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to unemployment insurance and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Management and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to take up the reconsideration for committee substitute for Senate Bill 131 at this time.
Places Senate Bill 131 before us in third reading. The clerk, please read Senate Bill 131, third reading.
House Committee's... No. House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 131 by the Labor and Management Committee, an act relating to workmen's compensation.
House, please stand at ease. Senate Bill 131 is before the House in third reading, and I'm going to place a call to the House on the question on the bill. Sergeant Arms, please guard the doors and round up the absent members. House, please stand at ease until the call is satisfied. House, please come to order. All the members are present. The question before the House is, shall Senate Bill 131 pass the House? Representative Urien?
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask the members to vote yes.
Representative Brown?
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for the purposes of rescinding our action and failing to adopt Amendment Number 3.
There's objection. The clerk please read Amendment Number 3.
Amendment number 3 by Mr. Parr. Page 3, line 27. AS 2330-215E is repealed and reenacted to read, E, death benefits payable to persons in accordance with A of this section shall inure to persons subject to continued entitlement.
Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, as I said on this floor yesterday, of all the amendments offered, this is by although I believe them all to be worthy, this is by far the most worthy amendment. It is... It's very important. It addresses an inequity that was discussed extensively on the floor yesterday. My understanding is it does not have any effect on the premium break, and I find it hard to believe that anyone would vote against it. I urge that the members go back to second reading.
The question is, shall the House return Senate Bill 131, the second reading, for the purposes of adopting Amendment Number 3? The motion requires 21 votes. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
19 yeas, 21 nays.
So the motion to return to second reading has failed to be adopted. The further discussion? Ready for the question. Question is, shall Senate Bill 131 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
26 yeas, 14 nays.
The Senate Bill 131 has passed the House. Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Clerk, please read the first item on the daily calendar. Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, point of information, is the call lifted at this time so the free conference can go back?
The call is lifted. The call was placed on Senate Bill 131, and the call is satisfied when the issue is disposed of, which has been. Clerk, please read the first item on the daily calendar.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 65 by Bradley, commending James E. Carter. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Ready for the question? Question is, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution 65 pass the House? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 65 has passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on the daily calendar?
Senate Bill Number 317, amended by Ray, an act relating to state income tax. The Committee on Finance has had Senate Bill 317 amended under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Duncan Freeman, Road Guy, Schaefer, Meekins, and Swanson. I have two amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read Amendment Number 1.
Amendment Number 1 by Mr. Meekins. Page 1, line 14. Add the entire text of HB 106 as introduced. HB 106 is an act entitled, An Act Relating to the Alaska Business License Tax and Providing for an Effective Date. I think the bill has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There's objection. Representative Meekins.
Speaker, this is the repeal of the Gross Business License Act. As the body is probably aware, since we did pass this measure during this session, the gross business license tax is by far the most regressive and the most onerous tax that we have on our books right now. And there's really no reason at all to have any regressive taxes, in my view. But this tax is doubly regressive. It's unfair to the consumer, because the poorer the person is, the higher percentage of his income he pays. And it's unfair to business because it's on gross receipts and not on profit. And they pay even if they're losing money. In fact, cases have been related to me where businesses that have been losing money went bankrupt or went out of business merely because of the effect of this tax on them. If they have a very high volume but aren't making very much in profits, they still have to pay on their volume, not on their profits. In fact, it's quite often the case that those businesses making the least profit pay the highest percentage of their profit and pay the most in absolute terms in the tax also. So I think that we should add this bill onto 317 and give the Senate a chance to vote for it. It does have included in this language a reimbursement provision so that all of the municipalities, which currently get about 65% of the gross receipts tax rebated to them from the state, will get that money through the normal revenue sharing provisions. And it'll be the same as a tax that they're getting currently. That will be just extended from now on.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, at the special request of Representative Meekins, I'd urge the members to vote yes.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I suspect that when Mr. Urien urges people to vote yes on other bills, he may not have the overwhelming support he had on only one issue this year. Mr. Speaker, I oppose the motion because the motion is to add the bill as introduced, and I think the bill as introduced has some unwisely drafted revenue sharing provisions. And we've been through that on this floor rather heavily in the debate on House Bill 106 involving deletion or attempts to amend the provisions that were put in there by the House Commerce Committee. And I won't go into a great amount of detail there, but just briefly, the argument is that those provisions would photograph one particular moment in time and for all time say that that would be the basis on which revenue sharing payments would be made to municipalities. Whether or not the municipalities changed in relative population, whether or not there were new municipalities that grew up that might not at all have qualified at the time of the passage of the law. Instead, we included a stair-step reduction. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the chair if, at least as it stands now, if it comes from the title of the bill. I believe myself that it could if the title were amended, but as the title now stands, it may be that it does not come from the title of the bill and it would be technically out of order until the title were amended.
I believe the amendments in order, the title might need some revising to make it fit together. I don't have a copy of House Bill 106 in front of me at this time, but the amendment is in order. Representative Parr.
Yeah, brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease.
Do you think that we can drop that off as on reconsideration? But anytime it's on reconsideration, it can go, right? I should have signed it before it went out. It went to...
House, please come back to order. During the at ease, a proposed amendment to amendment number one was placed on the clerk's desk. Would the clerk please read the amendment to the amendment?
Amendment to amendment number one by Rudd and Brown, page 1, line 24. Amend it to read, insert all of committee substitute for House Bill 106.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There's objection. Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, this would adopt, rather than the bill as it was introduced, the committee substitute, which is what passed the House and which provides for a stair-step withdrawal of the state's funding of the license tax to municipalities after the cessation of collecting that tax. This is the bill as it passed the House.
Representative Miller.
This is also the bill that raises property taxes. To the extent that we stair-step and withdraw support from the municipalities, the municipalities have no alternative but to stair-step up property taxes or sales taxes, equally regressive, to make up the difference. It's a, you know, it was bad when we passed it 3 or 4 weeks ago, it's bad now.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Well, I think it's a lobbying incentive bill. That is, it's a bill to create a great incentive for lobbying for a proper and equitable and comprehensive revenue sharing program of the sort that we've had difficulty getting through this legislature. And maybe it'll make it easier for us to get it through, and maybe and those who also have the same view as I do on the subject in the event it goes through. But also, Mr. Speaker, it's a lot fairer, and I won't go into the hours of debate, it seemed like hours anyway, that we had on the subject, and that is that it provides for a very slow and gentle zero out. That is, that the communities involved don't even get anything less than 100% of their current revenue sharing for 3 years, and then for the, I think, 2 years after that, it goes down to 80% and so forth. So that over a five-year period, I would think that they'd be in a position to make appropriate planning and probably to lobby the heck out of the legislature to pass a decent revenue sharing bill. I think it's a much wiser bill.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to point out to you, Mr. Speaker, that the amendment to the amendment sets before you, if adopted, a bill that was passed 29-6 on April the 29th of this year by this body. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Urien.
It's so seldom that I have the opportunity to stand up and agree with Representative Brown. I want to do so at this time.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I guess I started all this. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I did, of course, support the committee substitute version as it passed the House. The reason that I didn't advocate that in my original amendment is because I felt that it was most important to get this tax repealed in any form, and that the I felt that in the Senate at least, I felt that the chances of passage were greater in the amendment that I had. But also, one of my concerns was not to do damage to the original bill that I'm using to piggyback this bill onto. 317 I'm familiar with, and it is a very good bill. I would hate to see an amendment kill this bill, and I just want people to know now, because if it comes down the line that we're forced to make a decision between killing both bills or receding from one, I think that we certainly ought to recede if that's our only option.
Further discussion. Ready for the question. Question is, shall amendment to the amendment be adopted? We'll take a roll call vote. The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Change my vote from yes to no. Clerk, please announce final total.
22 yeas, 11 nays, 7 excused.
So the amendment to the amendment has been adopted. Brings the main question of adoption of amendment number 1 as amended for the House. Is there further discussion? Ready for the question. The question is, shall amendment number 1 be adopted? Take a roll call vote. The members may proceed to vote. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Freeman. Clerk, please announce final total.
25 yeas, 8 nays, 7 excused.
So amendment number 1 has been adopted. Ms. Clerk, are further amendments to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 2 by Mr. McKinnon. Page 1, line 12. Insert a new section 2. Has this been duplicated, it should be on each member's desk.
Representative McKinnon.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of amendment number 2.
There's objection. Representative McKinnon.
Speaker, this is intended to close a loophole in our present state income tax law. I know the term loophole is thrown around pretty loosely. Generally, what they're called loopholes are in the law for a specific reason. They're in there to encourage some sort of economic or social behavior. We have investment tax credits to encourage investment in capital improvements in business. We've got home repair deductions and interest deductions to encourage home ownership and maintenance of homes. We've got charitable contributions deductions to encourage giving to charities. One of the exemptions we have in the tax law is an exemption on the interest earned on municipal bonds. And that is also in there for a specific reason. It's in there to encourage people to invest in municipal and state bonds. And that has a very definite, valid purpose, because I think it's an end we ought to encourage. The problem comes in the fact that that's in the Internal Revenue Code, and the state of Alaska adopts the Internal Revenue Code by reference. So it's carried over into our laws exactly as it reads in federal law. And that grants a tax-free status for the interest earned on all bonds. Now, I think there's where the problem arises. What we're doing by granting an exemption, for instance, on state of Ohio bonds, is that what we're doing is encouraging Alaskans to invest their money in bonds of other states, and we're actually encouraging that by giving them a tax break for it. I don't really think it's a valid purpose that should be included in our income tax law. Certainly not included in the laws of other states, because right now, of the 41 states with state income tax laws, 34 of them are taxing Alaskan bonds. I think it's just bad public policy for us to be encouraging Alaskans to invest in the bonds of other states when we should be encouraging to invest in the bonds of the state of Alaska, and that's what this amendment would do.
Representative Miles, House, please stand at ease. Before the at ease, we had under consideration a motion to adopt amendment number 2. Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I think the effect of the motion before us is one to pull a bill from committee, and I know how members of the majority party feel about that, the committee chairman. But that's neither here nor there. I think we want to look at what the effects of the bill, in my opinion, are. This is a particular piece of legislation that was as I recall, passed this House a year ago and failed to become law in the other body. But in my opinion, Mr. Speaker, as we all know, that Alaska is getting is viewed by many people on the outside in the lower 48 as being rich or wealthy, and they have they're taking a dim view of Alaskans. They're sort of jealous because of our wealth, and it's causing us great problems in Congress and throughout the states, lower 48. And I think by passing a bill such as this, or legislating that we won't encourage, we're discouraging our citizens from investing in bonds from other states, I think only furthers the cause of some of those on the outside who dislike Alaskans. And I think it makes our image look bad, and I think at this time when we're trying to polish our image, this would only help to taint it, and I would ask that you vote no.
Speaker. Representative McKinnon.
Speaker, there's only really one question at issue here, and that's whether or not it's a valid public policy for the state of Alaska to use its tax laws to encourage people to invest in the bonds of other states. It's that simple. And I can hardly imagine anybody holding it against us for modifying our law to do the same thing that 34 of the other 41 states with an income tax law do.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I appreciate the remarks of the minority leader, and I can just see it. If this bill becomes law, this amendment becomes law, there'll no doubt be headlines in the Wall Street Journal, the Seattle PI about this law, and there'll be people screaming about the hideous Alaskans. I'm sure that everybody in the lower 48 will be very well informed on the subject, and it'll tarnish our image incredibly.
Representative Thien.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's would be important to think about the other side of the issue, and that's we do this here, and other states see that, and they're going to turn around and reciprocate and do the same kind of thing, and that puts us in the position of being a state that I think would like to sell its bonds on a market, a wide market, not just limit our market to Alaskans, and this is going to create a great deal of difficulty for the state in marketing of its bonds. So I would hope we'd vote against this amendment.
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, they already have reciprocated. As I said, 34 of the other 41 states with income taxes already tax our bonds. And they're the states that where we'd be most likely selling our bonds. California, New York, Massachusetts, virtually all of the major eastern states where we're likely to be being where we're likely to be trying to sell our bonds, already tax them. And there's no threat of retaliation because they're already doing it to us.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, a question to maker of the amendment. Would someone who purchased bonds, would this be retroactive to someone who had already purchased bonds and was receiving, say, yearly dividend or something?
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, it would be effective next year. The effective date isn't until January 1st of next year on this section, and it would affect first the tax return that would be filed in April of 79.
Representative Urien.
Which makes it retroactive to those who have already purchased bonds.
Mr. Speaker, the intent of the effective date is to give people to people who do have investments in the bonds of other states the opportunity to transfer those into Alaskan bonds.
Further discussion? Ready for the question. Question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Take a roll call vote. The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
15 yeas, 21 nays, 6 excused. 4 excused.
So amendment number 2 has not been adopted. Is the clerk of further amendments to the bill?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask the unanimous consent that Senate Bill 317 amended by the House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed in final passage.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Clerk, please read Senate Bill 317, third reading.
Senate Bill number 317, amended by the House by Ray. May I have that first amendment? An act entitled, an act relating to the Alaska Business License Tax and providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 317 is before the House in third reading. There is a proposed amendment to the title of the bill, which is an allowable amendment in third reading. The clerk, please read amendment number 3.
Amendment number 3 by Mr. Brown. Page 1, line 6. Change the title to read, an act relating to taxation.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous. Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There's objection. Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I had consulted with the Legislative Affairs Agency, and it was their view that the best way to amend the title, if it was deemed appropriate by the body, would be just to add, make tax plural, make it taxes. It would be the least expansive. I don't know if, you see, an act relating to state taxation would encompass a great deal more. I don't know how important that is.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, since procedurally the other body is not in a position to do any more tacking on, so the only thing that could happen is if the thing ends up in conference committee, and of course your procedure has been to have every conference committee start out without powers of pre-conference, the likelihood that this would make the bill overly expansive or provide an opportunity for amendment beyond the intention of the body is virtually zero. So the technical differences pointed out by Mr. Meekins, while well taken, I don't think really hurt us all that badly. I urge the adoption of the amendment. If he has a big problem about it, we can have it at ease and he can change it, and I'll support it.
Representative Meekins. House, please stand at ease.
What happened to the amendment? Did you take it? Wipe that.
Number revised amendment number 3. We do have a motion to adopt the original proposal. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, trusting in Mr. Meekins' wisdom and discretion without having read his new proposed title, I move and ask unanimous consent to withdraw my amendment.
Hearing no objection, motion is withdrawn. Clerk, please read the revised amendment number 3.
Revised amendment number 3 by Brown. Change the title to read, an act relating to state income taxes.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move my amendment, which I am now informed what it is.
Hearing no objection, amendment is adopted. Are there any further proposed amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Brown.
Could we have an at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Senate Bill 317 is before the House in third reading. Representative Phillips.
I just have a brief question. How much of a fiscal impact does the original bill, 317, have on it? And maybe a brief history of the bill itself, how it got it.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to the first portion of the question, there is no fiscal note along with this legislation. Fiscal impact is very, very small. Estimates are maybe $20,000. The history, that's the first section of the bill. The history of the bill is that in 1975, I think, in legislative session, first session of the ninth legislature, we passed an act at that time that would have brought, that would have taxed all wages earned by residents of the state of Alaska, whether it was earned inside or outside the state. That act passed the latter part of the session, was retroactive to the first to January 1st of 1975. Since that time, it's come to our attention it caused quite a bit of problem with one particular group of people, and that's the only group that's been brought to our attention. Those happen to be residents of Skagway who work for the White Pass Yukon Railroad, and they do earn a great portion of their income outside the state of Alaska. As you'll note, the bill has been changed to wages earned outside the United States, so it applies only in that to that case now. What happened is White Pass Yukon, of course, was not aware that we were going to change the statute. They did not withhold taxes for the first half of 1975. After we passed the law, they were not aware of it, and they did not withhold taxes at all in 1975, and my checking with Department of Revenue is that notices were not sent out as they should have been, probably. So they were not aware of it, and what's happened now is the state has gone back, as they should under the statute we passed in 1975, made some assessments, and of course assessed some penalty and interest charges, and some people up there owe in the neighborhood of $1,800 in back taxes. This act would correct that for the year 1975, but would mean that for the years 1976 and thereafter, that their wages would be taxable to the state of Alaska. We're just taking care of it for the 1 year where we went back and did it retroactively on them after the year was half over.
Further discussion? Representative Phillips.
Maybe I'm off the wrong track. What about the construction people working overseas that are residents of the state of Alaska? I'm sure there might be some people in that situation. I don't know.
Representative Duncan.
I'm not sure that that would apply in this case. Department of Revenue looked at all the various possibilities. They're very satisfied with the language as it presently is. It says outside the United States. They saw no further problem and probably no further cases other than those in Skagway.
Representative Hayes.
Just a further question of clarification to Representative Duncan. Do I understand it correctly that the people who have a problem are Alaskan residents who live in Alaska and apparently should have paid taxes, but the White Pass Railroad did not deduct the taxes, therefore they didn't pay on the pay as you go plan. So since they now have to come up with what they should have paid, you're seeking relief for those people retroactive portion. Is that right?
Representative Duncan.
Well, under the act we passed in 1975, they should be paying taxes on those wages they earned, and they will be paying taxes on those wages they earned from January 1st, 1976 on. We passed the act in probably April or May of 75. It was enacted into law, signed by the governor and so on, in June, and that made it retroactive to January 1st of 75. So already 6 or 7 months had gone by where taxes were not withheld on those wages. And then White Pass Yukon was not notified of the change in statute, apparently. And I asked the Department of Revenue to send me copies of their news releases and their method of notification, and they neglected to do so, neglected to notify, not neglected to send them to me, but neglected to notify the employer. So they didn't withhold throughout the year. This appears to be the only group of people in the state that were adversely impacted. In that way, and they will be paying taxes on their wages just as everyone else will from 1976 on, unfortunately because of a slip up, I think, in the administration of it, and also because we made it retroactive. It does work a real hardship on those people, and as I indicated, $1,800 some of them have, and some of them somewhat less, but that's the explanation for it. Yes.
Representative Anderson. House, please stand at ease. The question before the House is, shall Senate Bill 317 pass the House? Is there further discussion? Ready for the question. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
34 yeas, no nays, 6 excused.
So Senate Bill 317 has passed the House. The bill does carry effective date sections. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the roll call on Senate Bill 317 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, effective date sections are adopted on Senate Bill 317. The clerk, please read the next item on the daily calendar.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 12 by the Rules Committee by request of the Administrative Regulation Review Committee, annulling regulations adopted by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs pertaining to supplying income tax forms when applying for the Farm and Agricultural Land Use Assessment and Tax Deferment Program. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had Senate Concurrent Resolution 12 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass and attaches a report of its intent. The report was signed by Mrs. Rudd, Chairman, concurred in by Rudd, Lathine, O.C. Smith, and Miles. Having no recommendation, Phillips. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read amendment number one.
Amendment number one by Meekins and Miles. Page 2, line 8. Add, and be it further resolved that the State Department of Revenue may not require copies of federal personal income tax returns to be attached to and sent with state tax forms. The Department of Revenue may require only information from federal personal income tax forms as is necessary for state personal income tax calculation.
Representative Meekins.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Point of objections.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
House, please stand at ease. Actually involves an amendment to the statutes, and it's not an amendment that's in order to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 12. So the amendment is actually not in order, Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I'm very disappointed to hear that, of course, but I accept your decision, naturally. I think this is a very important amendment, and I would sincerely like to have it be ruled in order, but if it's not possible, perhaps I can put it in the bill form in some more appropriate manner.
Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, we just had a bill up that now has a title that's amended so widely that if he wanted to reconsider the bill, he could do it tomorrow.
Ms. Clerk, have further amendments to Senate Concurrent Resolution 12.
Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? You ready for the question? Question is, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 12 pass the House? We'll take a roll call vote. The members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
33 yeas, no nays, 7 excused.
The Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 12 has passed the House. Will clerk please read the next item on the daily calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 355 by the Finance Committee, an act making a supplemental appropriation to the Legislative Affairs Agency and the Legislative Finance Division and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Finance has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 355 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 355 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Schaefer, Duncan, Freeman, Guy, Rode, and Meekins. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the House Committee substitute, Finance Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
There's objection. Representative Urien.
Someone can tell us the difference here between this.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, the difference between the committee substitute and the original bill is made up of two or three different items, and I can go through those very, very briefly. In Section 1, as you'll note in the original bill, it was $194,000. It's now moved up to $423,500. That difference is made up of $11,000 necessary funding necessary to cover Capital 77 television costs or their post-session wrap-up work. Another $193,500 is necessary to cover additional 10 days from May 20th to close of business on May 29th for legislative expenses, and would also cover Capital 77 costs from May 20th to the 29th. And an additional $3,800 is in Section 2, excuse me, let me stop a minute. An additional $25,000 in Section 1 is $25,000 for the Tanzier contract. As you'll recall, two or three weeks ago on this floor, we passed a pay raise, which included $25,000 for Tanzier contracts. That a change has been made, and the approach on that has been deleted from that piece of legislation and is being added to this piece. And then in Section 2, the amount has been increased by $3,800. That's necessary funding, an additional $3,800 for legislative finance to fund temporary session employee salaries from May 20th to the 29th.
Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. There was objection to the adoption of the House Committee substitute. Is the objection maintained? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute is adopted. Is the clerk of amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the Finance House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 355 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection. Do you have an objection to the advancement of the bill, Representative Kelly? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Clerk, please read Senate Bill 355 in third reading.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 355 by the Finance Committee. An act making a supplemental appropriation to the Legislative Affairs Agency and the Legislative Finance Division and providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 355 is before you in third reading. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, this is getting to be a bad habit, standing up and complaining about all these supplemental appropriations, but they continue to come up and we continue to sit here in Juneau. And not only do I have an objection towards this supplemental appropriation because I don't feel it's necessary, but I have a double objection that I don't have a fiscal note in front of me explaining what this thing is all about. Now, we had explanation from Representative Duncan that this money does not all go just for salaries or per diems, but it's spread out in a whole different areas, including consultant fees and everything else. And I think it's just flat irresponsible of this body that I don't have a fiscal note on my desk explaining to me what this money is used for. And once again, I'll vote no on this supplemental.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I was glad to hear that the other body in their wisdom decided that I was right when I objected to Mr. Tanzier being paid with an inappropriate vehicle on his floor some weeks ago. I still rather object to paying him in this vehicle, but I suppose we'll have to let it go by because the gentleman has done his work and we'll have to pay him sooner or later. But it is unfortunate that we're forced to pass another supplemental appropriation to pay our wages and expenses that we incur here in Juneau. It's unfortunate that the session has extended to such a period that this has become necessary. And I remember my prediction on the floor when we voted for the first legislative appropriation. I predicted that we would do it again, and the last time we did it, I said, I told you so, and I guess I have to say again that I told you so. Mr. Speaker, in your wisdom, laid out a 100-day plan when we first got here. You know what they say about the best laid plans of mice and men. It's unfortunate, and maybe next session, you and your members of your majority party can put together another plan and for 100 days and be successful at it.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I don't know who the mice are or who the men are. Maybe there might be some argument as to who's on which end of this hall over here, and that might have something to do with the length of the session. But I'm always interested in the new variation of the standard speech against bills of this sort. I hope I'm never in the position that I have to be, possibly as a minority member, making that speech. But in case I do end up in that situation eventually, I'd appreciate from Mr. Urey and copies of all the various variations of the speech that he's previously given here and in previous years. And Mr. Kelly asked for a fiscal note. Well, the fiscal note goes ahead and tells you how much something costs. You don't put a fiscal note on an appropriation bill. There's a figure right there. You can read it. I'm referring to page 1, line 10, and to page 1, line 13. That's a fiscal note.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, again, on the fiscal note, I would like to know, you know, what proportion of this money is going to what? What are we buying here? Are we once more investing into our mysterious teleconferencing network? Are we paying consultant fees? What are we doing with this money? And regarding to Representative Brown's problem about being in a minority and having to stand up like this, let me just assure him that were he in the minority this year, he wouldn't be here on the 135th day making his speech, because none of us would be here at this time.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I suppose we probably could have adjourned just a little bit earlier if we'd been so inclined. I think it's probably necessary to respond to these statements. So we're at the 135th day. It's a little difficult for one body to adjourn on the 100th day, I'll grant you, when the other body doesn't bring their budget down to 105th. But that logic aside, I think we probably could have been out a little bit sooner if we had, for instance, been willing to cave in, as it were, on the severance tax. But in spite of the fact that none of us like particularly extending the session, Mr. Speaker, I don't think there's any doubt that the policy that this body has taken in standing by, sticking by, holding tough, this year is going to bring in about $35 million in extra revenue, so I think that was time well spent. In years to follow, it'll bring in $50 million a year more because we spent this extra time here. I don't think it's time badly spent, Mr. Speaker. Besides that, I really enjoy seeing the guys and the gals.
Representative Urien.
But we have spent none of this time here planning on what we're going to do with the millions of dollars that's going to go into a thing called the permanent fund. Not any time at all.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question is, shall Senate Bill number 355 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
28 yeas, 9 nays, 3 excused.
Senate Bill number 355 has passed the House. The bill does carry an effective date section.
Speaker,
Representative Miller.
I'll ask unanimous consent to the roll call on Senate Bill 355 to consider the roll call and the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, the effective date clause is adopted on Senate Bill 355. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, I think it would be appropriate at this time under Rule 47D to move and ask unanimous consent that H.J.R. 4 relating to a 90-day session be discharged from the State Affairs Committee and sent to the Rules Committee for placement on tomorrow's calendar.
There's an objection to the motion. Strictly speaking, the motion's out of order in terms of the order of business. However, Chair will entertain the motion. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's quite obvious to most of us here that the legislature, unless it has a specific time to adjourn, just sort of meanders. Representative Miller made reference to the severance tax and how that's what's kept us away. I don't really think that's true, Mr. Speaker. I think that if we knew we were going to get out of here at the 90th day or the 100th of day, we would have started earlier, would have worked harder. And I think we would have been out of here. I might add that several states have session limitations. Arizona sets for 60 days, Arkansas 60 days, Indiana 61 days, Maryland 90 days, Minnesota 120 days, and there's several more. I think, Mr. Speaker, that unless we set a certain time and try to get out by that time, we're going to run into this every single year, where because of deals that might be cooking or bills held hostage, we just sit around here forever. It's equally obvious to me that the State Affairs Chairman has no interest in this bill. I introduced this bill on the third day of the session, and it's sat in some back dusty file cabinet ever since, and I can't get the bill brought up for a hearing. So I hope everybody in the body that's interested in limiting our session will support this motion to bring this bill before the body for a hearing. Thank you.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I for one appreciate very much Mr. Kelly's remarks pointing out which other states have limitations and so forth. And there's an old saying, we don't give a damn how they do it outside. And I think that applies in this case. I'd also like to assure the previous speaker that State Affairs Chairman isn't the only one that doesn't have any interest in this particular legislation.
Representative Phillips.
Speaker, if I think the bill the way it's written now, it has to change. I'm going to oppose this particularly resolution, but I generally favor the concept of 90 days with two-thirds of the legislature vote for a 30-day extension in the event that we come upon a situation where we can't do it within 90 days. Just based on the resolution itself, the way it's written, I'm going to have to vote no on.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I wish Mr. Bradley had sent it over to my committee because that's I've got an empty drawer down there. I've been passing out too much legislation, and this is one more piece that shouldn't be passed up. Might give you a good example. I think the severance tax is a good example of a complicated issue that's importance of a lot of people in the state. So one issue that came up in the bill related to the definition of a few words called the gross value at a point of production. Now the Senate didn't choose to put this definition in their legislation, even though the administration had requested them to. And I think it was based on a lack of understanding and a lack of information. When we got into the Free Conference Committee and asked the administration to present certain information to answer some questions, it became obvious to everybody that potentially we were talking about $60 million a year. Now, I think if we...
State your point, Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I thought we were voting on a motion to pull a bill from the committee. And it's not a tax bill.
Representative Eliason, debate on the merits of the bill, I think, or the resolution, is in order, discussing whether or not to have the resolution removed from committee. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, the point is that if we would have adjourned it at 90 days because of something that was written in statute of the Constitution, it wouldn't have had any relation to what the problem was. And we didn't have that information. And at the point when the that information was presented to everybody, they realized the necessity of having that language, which would have prevented a court suit and a possible loss of $60 million a year. And I think that's why you can't put arbitrary limits on the legislature. Nobody likes the length of time we stay here, and I think a lot of it's caused by the bicameral system. And we've certainly seen that in the last few days. And everybody's got their own opinions as to why we're here, but the point is we're here to do serious business and resolve problems and to make sure that the state isn't going to lose money when it shouldn't by a lack of information or people overlooking something. That's why I think that this resolution should just stay right where it is.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Kelly brought out the fact that other states do have limitations. I'm not sure that he's aware, but I'm aware of some states that do have limitations. For instance, Oregon has a constitutional limitation of 60-day session every other year. And of course, even though it is in their constitution, they are meeting almost in continual session in Oregon. They either stop the clock, as the state of Alaska did year after year after year when we had a 60-day limitation, or if they don't stop the clock and just continue, they just recess for one day and are called immediately into a special session. And no one can really tell whether they're in the regular session, constitutionally mandated, or a special session, because they meet most of the year, both years. And in state after state, when they do have limitations, either legislative or constitutional, they find it sometimes appropriate and necessary to violate that constraint. So I think even though Mr. Kelly's meaning well, even if he did manage to pull the bill and get it moving, and even if we did have some limit, it certainly would just be a perfunctory motion. If we weren't ready to adjourn, then we wouldn't adjourn. We would either stop the clock or go into special session or something else.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, noting the hour, I don't know about anybody else, I'm rather hungry. I think we should vote on this measure, and as I indicated on a similar motion several weeks ago, give it all the consideration it deserves and go to lunch.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, the question of a 90-day session has always seemed to me to be somewhat a simplistic answer to a very, very complicated question. And Mr. Kelly mentions the number of states that do have limitations on their sessions. I would submit that not one of those states is wrestling with and trying to solve as many different kinds of problems as we are in the state of Alaska. And even if a 90-day session or any kind of a limitation on a session were a good idea, which I would dispute at any rate, I certainly would dispute that 90 days, we can do all of our business within 90 days. We are dealing with such issues I just jotted down as the development of local governments in rural areas, enhancement of our fisheries, both dealing with the 200-mile limit and within the 3-mile limit, all of the fisheries problems, trying to deal somehow with the outer continental shelf developments, exploration for oil and gas, developing a system of education in the rural areas, telecommunications, building the Alaska Railroad to the Canadian border, all of the pressures of oil and gas development, all of the pressures for any kind of land land use, D2 all the way down to land use in municipalities. Those questions, I submit, Mr. Speaker, are broader and more deep than those that any other state is dealing with. And that is really the reason why I oppose any kind of an arbitrary limitation on our sessions.
Further discussion? Representative Kelly.
Well, Mr. Speaker, most of those subjects that Representative Rudd mentioned are of course, to be studied in the interim committees that the leadership of this body was so generous in setting up. I might also mention that there seems to be considerable interest in a 90-day session. There seems to be considerable debate on this floor. I would think for that reason alone that we should get the bill out in the daylight and go to it and decide what the will of this body is. It's no surprise to me that almost everybody that spoke up against this motion is a member of the leadership of the majority of this body, and that's the reason we've been down here for 135 days. And it's not the freshman members of this body that are keeping us here, Mr. Speaker. It's the leadership. They're the ones that are opposed to this motion. I hope the body will support it.
Representative Urien.
I'd like to correct Mr. Kelly. It's not the leadership of people here, it's the lack of leadership.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, as a charter member of the SOL caucus, I guess I'm very sympathetic to Mr. Kelly. But on the other hand, I'm kind of reminded of something else, Mr. Speaker, that people send us down here to do business, and do their business. And many, many years ago, Mr. Speaker, and before the Army had its draft, you know, before everybody was a draftee, the old regular Army soldiers used to say, well, you volunteered, didn't you?
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I am not going to make a motion to pull H.J.R. 33 from the State Affairs Committee, although it addresses a related subject. I am going to submit a sponsor substitute relating to a mandatory recess in the legislature. I believe that there's been one hearing held on it. There was not all that great amount of interest expressed, but I'll keep at my guns in the usual procedure in the committee system.
So further discussion? Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Joint Resolution 4 be removed from the State Affairs Committee? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
11 yeas, 26 nays, 3 excused.
So the motion to remove the bill from committee has failed. House, please stand at ease.
This body stand in recess to 1:30.
Hearing no objection, House is in recess. Will clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 98, amended by the Commerce Committee, an act making miscellaneous amendments to the banking statutes. The Committee on Commerce has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 98 amended under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House committee substitute for a committee substitute for Senate Bill 98 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Parr, Brown, and McKinnon. Signing do not pass, Chatterton, Carpenter, and Hayes. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the House Commerce Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
There's objection. The call has been placed in the House. Representative Urien. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, while we're waiting, could I make an announcement?
Go ahead, Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I want to announce that the Judiciary Committee is planning on having a committee meeting today, if we have time, on House Bill 474 and 475, which is a malpractice legislation. And a member of my committee, Representative Brutt, has asked me to have this meeting to have a hearing on these bills. And I intend to do that if we have time. If we don't have time, we're not going to have a hearing.
Representative Urien.
I would suggest that the member of the majority party who placed the call remove it.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, at the request of the sponsor and of the concurrence of the Finance Committee Chairman, I would like to ask at this time that you waive Finance Committee referral on HCR 79.
Hearing no objection, Finance Committee referral on House Concurrent Resolution Number 79 be waived. Bill has another referral to the State Affairs Committee. House, please stand at ease. The call is not yet satisfied on Senate Bill 98. If there's no objection awaiting satisfaction of the call, we can proceed with the rest of our calendar. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Bill Number 164, amended by Rody, Croft, and Coletta, an act relating to filings for state office. The Committee on State Affairs has had Senate Bill 164 amended under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 164 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Miles, McKinnon, and Nackack. Signing do not pass, Dankworth and Lathine. Having no recommendation, Kelly. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the House Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Is the clerk of amendments the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller. Excuse me, Representative Phillips.
Yeah.
House, please stand at ease. House, please come to order. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask unanimous consent to withdraw the motion, the adoption motion.
Hearing no objection, the motion is withdrawn.
And apparently elements of this bill is in conflict with some other legislation that's already passed, and so I'm going to move at this time, Mr. Speaker, that Senate Bill 164 be taken from today's calendar and sent back to rules.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. The clerk, please read the next item on the daily calendar.
Senate Bill Number 116 by the Judiciary Committee by request, an act relating to employment security and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Labor and Management has had Senate Bill 116 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 116, and that it be reported back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Brown, Chairman, signing Dupass, Hayes, Loveseth, and Brown. Having no recommendations, Smith, McKinnon, and Osterbach. The Committee on Finance has had Senate Bill 116 under consideration. Five of the members of the committee recommend it be replaced with the Labor and Management House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 116, and that it do pass, be reported back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, signing Dupass, Swanson, Meekins, Rode, and Cooper. Having no recommendation, Duncan, Buchholz, Schaefer, and Guy, and Haugen. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the House Labor and Management Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Is the clerk of amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 116 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Clerk, please read Senate Bill 116 in third reading.
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 116 by the Labor and Management Committee, an act relating to unemployment insurance and providing for an effective date.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, this bill is now two or three bills. It was originated in the Senate as a bill sought by fishermen, and because of the lateness of the submission of a House bill, I believe House Bill 372, by the governor on March 18th, we were urged to essentially tack that bill into the Senate bill with a similar title. The additional material actually relates to rather comprehensive and extensive amendments of the unemployment compensations laws of the state of Alaska to bring it into conformity with Public Law 94-566 passed by the Congress. If we're not in conformity by December 1, 1977, there's a substantial chance that our program will be disapproved, that our trust funds will be taken over by the federal government, and one thing that will hit every employer in the state, that is that they will not be able to take credit for state contributions to the ESC against their federal unemployment taxes. Now, I think that other members want to discuss the, if asked, the provisions that specifically relate to exempting fishermen from the requirements of collecting these funds and also contributing to the employment security system. And I have a question of my own, since this bill did have a finance referral after it had gone out of my committee at the request of the chairman. And I understand Mr. Meekins was involved in that. During the IDs, I was asking him a question. I'd like to know what the Finance Committee did on it. I heard some indication that there was going to be change in the fiscal note. The fiscal note is a rather complicated one. So I'd like to, if I could, through the chair, direct that question to Representative Meekins.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, the Finance Committee held hearings on the bill, and essentially we didn't make any changes in it. Passed it out as it came to us, inclusive of the fishermen's, the part relating to fishermen, excluding them from unemployment insurance, and also including the provisions that allow state and local government workers to be covered under this unemployment insurance. The fiscal impact, as the fiscal note as given to the Finance Committee by labor, was, in my view, drawn in error, and was drawn on, I think, a mistaken understanding of what we wanted on a fiscal note. The fiscal note tells us what the total costs of covering 25,000 state and local employees would be, but it doesn't tell you what the additional costs would be because of the passage of this bill. And the point is here that the Supplemental Unemployment Act, SUA, covers state and local workers. And some of them have some divisions of our state government, in any case, the unemployment division, for one, have opted in already under a different eligibility program. So all of our workers are covered now, and there are people on board in the unemployment division taking care of this. So this fiscal note tells us how much it's costing us to take care of these people, but of course, since it's being covered already, there wouldn't be any additional people needed. Secondly, the budget for 77 has passed by both the House and the Senate, and I assume by the Free Conference Committee, included 77 extra people for the Unemployment Insurance Division because of the impact, or at least the expected impact, of people becoming unemployed after working on the pipeline. So they have a fairly large increase there that if there were any impact, they could increase. The third thing is that in both cases, the department's fiscal note and the one I recommended out of finance, for 78, the fiscal impact on the general fund is zero because the provisions of the federal act mandate that the federal government pick up the first year for the program. So I'm recommending a zero fiscal note for the years after that, but even if that recommendation is incorrect, we'll have experience of this first year to tell us how many more people we might need, what was the increase in activity, and those types of things, and won't have to rely on what is now just an estimate, a guess of what the increase might be. So in any case, for next year, it's zero, and I think that's all we need to be concerned with at this point. And I contend that it'll be zero from then on.
Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, I like to point out that I think that Mr. Meekins is being too modest. The committee referred to his subcommittee of fiscal note in which the Department of Labor claimed that they need 34 new people on account of this program. And after Mr. Meekins went into it, it was discovered that, lo and behold, they only need, I think, two people or two and a half or something like that. And I think he should be congratulated.
Representative Hargan.
That anybody that employs one or more persons is subject to unemployment compensation law. And that regardless of how you argue that, whether you're a shareholder, on a share basis, the shares are the same as wages as far as I'm concerned. So I think what I'm going to do is vote against the bill and reconsider it and present an amendment to tomorrow's session to straighten it out.
Representative Freeman.
Could we have a brief at ease, please?
Will the House please stand at ease? Representative Brown.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask Mr. Meekins. I think I approve of and laud the activity that the Finance Committee had and that his subcommittee had as described by himself. Mr. Cooper, I just want to inquire as to the procedure. The only fiscal note I have is one that shows all these millions of dollars and positions and everything like that. Is there actually a revised fiscal note that says zero, and will this go to the final wrap-up on the, you know, the ribbon tying on the pre-conference committee on the budget, or will something fall through the cracks and we'll still have the big fiscal note? Is there a revised fiscal note?
Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, yes, there is. It was signed by the Department of Labor, in fact. And there is a fiscal note. I've seen it, and we will be proceeding on the basis of that note.
Is there further discussion? Representative Loveseth. Representative Haugen. Yes, we are, Representative Haugen.
Mr. Speaker, I will move and ask the United States Senate to return to second reading for addition of a specific amendment.
Okay. Representative Haugen, the amendment will have to be written and placed on the clerk's desk. Will the House please stand at ease? We have a proposed amendment on the clerk's desk. Would the clerk please read proposed amendment number one?
Amendment number one by Mr. Haugen. Page 14, delete sections 23 and 24. Page 15, line 12, delete 23, 20, 15, comma.
Representative Haugen. There's objection, Representative Haugen.
These fellows fish
two or three different quota areas a year and carry a crew, at least four men, and in many cases now they're going as high as six when they fish night and day in order to take a full advantage of the quota and the time allowed to catch it. They're no different than any other working people in the state, and I think that they're entitled to benefits. Myself, I've never drawn a dime of it in all my life, but there are lots of shipmates that I have that depend on it after the 6, 7, 8 months of the year if they can't get a short job, to at least have their unemployment benefits available to them.